Hello and welcome to the 8th Adamola Bookmen podcast with me, Al Bond, and my co-host, John Coughlin. Say hi, John.
Hello there. How are you doing?
All right, buddy. Nice to hear you. This week we're doing Peter Crouch, How to Be a Footballer. What do you think about Peter Crouch? What do you think?
I guess I always kind of liked Crouch in a way, you know. I thought this book would be good fun, actually. And parts of it were fun.
It is fun. It is. It's not really an autobiography, is it? It's just humorous anecdotes stitched together under the guise of how to be a footballer. Every chapter is a different aspect of being a footballer, from the dressing room to tattoos to cars, etc., etc. It's amusing stories and anecdotes linked together under these banners.
Yeah. Have you ever read Three Men in a Boat?
Yes, I have, Johnny. Jerome K. Jerome.
Yeah. That book's about 150 years old. But, you know, that's like a kind of a series of observations, humorous observations. This is like a shit footballer's version of that, you know?
Wow.
But yeah, I would say it's more like a collection of short stories. And it's a bit of a pity because I think, yeah, we don't learn very much about Crouch. Maybe, you know, that's obviously how he wanted it. But I say it's a pity because I think that he stumbled on quite an interesting way, you know, a kind of a useful literary device. But what he ought to have done, as you say, all of the different chapters have different focus. So one is about cars, one's about tattoos. If he had taken that approach, but then told his story using each thing, I think it would have been a really good way to lay out a book. But he didn't do that.
No, but it is a fine read, isn't it? Because they're very digestible little chunks. Each chapter is its own little thing. It's easy to read.
I think the book started really promisingly, you know. I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. Because he says, essentially, he's taking us behind the velvet rope. Members only part of football. I was like, okay, that's fun. But yeah, I just thought that and I should say as well, I listened to this book, the audiobook, and Crouch reads it. And that was kind of fun in itself because there's no arc or kind of overarching narrative. It kind of just meanders a bit, doesn't it, at times?
It does meander a bit. I don't feel like I've read a book. I felt like I'd read a magazine or something.
Yeah, like an FHM article or something like that.
Well, that's a word, isn't it? FHM. Lads. Banter. It was co-written with Tom Fordyce, who I believe used to be a BBC writer. And he was also the co-host of the Peter Crouch podcast. Have you ever heard that, Johnny?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Tom Fordyce always comes across as very well. He's a little bit older. I think he's in his 50s now. But he likes a laugh, he likes a beer, he likes football. And to me, reading the book, I just heard Tom Fordyce. That's who I heard. I heard Tom Fordyce writing a book about Peter Crouch. You heard it, so you heard Peter Crouch's voice. So I think we may have had very different experiences with this.
Oh, that's interesting.
The podcast he did, and I listened to a couple of seasons of it. That's what gave it up, because it was just laddie banter. Crouch will tell a story, and then Tom Fordyce and the other guy, who I think was a Radio 1 host, he was a right knobhead, just like fall about laughing. I'd go, ah, ha, ha, you know. It was reasonably wearing after a while. But again, Crouchy comes across quite well, because Crouchy knows how to self-deprecate, right? He is self-deprecating, and that is divine.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think he kind of did it too much in the book. This became a bit predictable, that part. But yeah, I think it's, and one part of the book that is very interesting is when he talks about the abuse that he received as a, you know, as a tall teenager and as a footballer, obviously. And we can get to that later, but he does explain that he kind of learned very quickly. When he was in school, he had two things in his locker, really. He could play football and he was able to make fun of himself. So if people were picking on him, making fun of his size or whatever, he said that he would make a joke, and depending on how tough the person was, he'd make the joke about himself or about that other person. So that was quite nice. But yeah, he is self-deprecating, but maybe Maybe that's so instinctive now that he almost does it too much. It's like he offsets or prevents somebody from getting the dig in first because he's already jumped ahead with
the... He doesn't do it too much, Johnny, because at the start of the book, there's a thing where it's like about the author where Crouchy goes like, oh, I'm 6'7", I'm very tall. No, the weather's not different up here, thank you very much. And no, I haven't played basketball. And then in chapter one, he goes, I've been crouched. People always ask me, is the weather different up there? And no, I don't play basketball. It's like, bloody hell, mate. Like, people do say that to you a lot.
You think that you just play basketball to avoid having to explain why you didn't.
So I did some research into this, Johnny, and it says, if you're 7 foot tall in America, there's a 3% chance you'll be playing NBA.
Jeez, I like
3% of 7 foot people in America have played NBA.
That's incredible.
I mean, there's a good chance. If you're 7 foot, come on, lad.
So Crouchy, yeah, I thought this book started like it was going to be a lot of fun, you know, like, oh, you know, we're going to find out about what it's like in the world of football. And that's what he endeavors to do, right? There's a lot of really small, short and mildly entertaining anecdotes. And then there's occasional one that is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's not good.
No,
it's but not. But if you had to go on a plane ride or summit, it's not bad.
Exactly. It's exactly that kind of thing. If you had to like sit in a waiting room for a while. So he says he's bringing us into the world of footballers, and the world of footballers is pretty dumb.
Yeah, it is pretty dumb. And he's kind of like, he has old man views here as well, generally, doesn't he? I mean, Crouchy, he gets along with everyone, but tattoos, he pulls out one of the lines like, you used to get a tattoo if you wanted to be individual. Now you're individual if you haven't got a tattoo. Yeah, well, well done, Peter Dad. I mean, that's what my dad literally says. So, well done on that, Crouchy.
I think what he does as well a bit is that he tries to sneer a bit at the world of football, but then he's so much a part of it and so in love with it as well. So he does kind of undermine himself a bit, I think.
That's it. He wants to look down on all the ridiculous antics they get up to, the wasteful money. But of course, he's wasted that money. He's the recipient of all his fun. He goes out on all these fun days. He plays golf all day long if he wants to. Yeah. But also he's like, not like the normal people. Well, you're not one of us anymore, Peter. You're not.
No.
So it was written in 2018 when he was still an ongoing concern. He was still playing for Stoke at that point, which is an unglamorous way to finish your career, isn't it?
I didn't realize he scored 100 goals and the most headed goals of any player, although he's now even with Harry Kane. Did you know that?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, but on 40, I just saw it a second ago. Just before we get in there, sorry, you see our friend Benoit Asso-Okoto showed up again.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Yes, he does. And in typically eccentric fashion.
Yeah.
He talked about his pre-match meal, which was a croissant and a can of full fat Coke.
Yeah, a packet of crisps and a hot chocolate.
Sounds like a lovely snack.
Yeah, he said he was a total oddball. He said that he wouldn't know what team they were playing, even though they'd been talking about it all week. He wouldn't know who any of the players are. And I was thinking, like, this is why Barton hates this guy. Like, this guy can just wander in and be good at football when Barton had to, like, squeeze every drop out of it, you know?
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, chapter one is about the dressing room, all the fun in there. He gets a dig in at Andre Voronin at Liverpool by basically comparing him with Dalglish and Ian Rush. And it's not his last dig at Voronin.
No.
But it's a bit about the old communal bath that is no longer a thing. Did you ever take communal baths playing sports teams, Johnny?
No.
Playing for sports? I did. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. It's so gross.
Doesn't sound good. I didn't know that they were gone, and I guess that makes sense. But, you know, it's not something that you just think about randomly, you know?
Well, you wouldn't design one now if you're going to design a bathroom. Is the bathroom big enough for all the two? Oh, it's all right. Just give us the showers.
Yeah.
So it's just little bits of anecdotes. It's interesting when he says that Arsenal, Highbury, it's like, oh, they offer you artisan food. Chicken wings and potato wedges. It's not that artisan. I prepared for you an artisan dinner. Ooh, hello. Wedges? Chicken wings? And I'm not knocking him. but I don't know if I describe them as artisan. So those dressing rooms, that's a bit of fun. Chapter 2, superstitions. You touched on that.
So one of the ones he mentioned is Cruyff used to punch his goalkeeper before games. That doesn't sound like the best. But punch him in the stomach before games didn't sound like the best preparation.
I mean, it's added every team. When Cruyff got transferred to Barcelona, the Barcelona keeper's like, oh, I don't fancy this. What? Who are we signing? No. I'm going to put in a transfer request.
He described him as the most creative player of all time.
Yeah, again, I mean, well, that's got to be your four dice, lad, isn't it? It's got to be.
Yeah, maybe.
When did he start playing? The 80s? It's got to be the 80s, early 80s.
Yeah.
Was Peter Crouch watching? I think he went to Feyenoord in the late 80s, right? To piss off Ajax. And was he watching Feyenoord in the early 80s? I don't think so. I don't think anyone.
No, I doubt it very much.
There were a couple of interesting things. Gary Lineker never shot at goal in warm-ups.
Yeah, and Andy Cole wouldn't go onto the field until...
I mean, how did that start? How did you start that? I mean, how big a player do you have to be? Where it's like, okay, warming up, lads. He's at Bristol City. And he's like, No.
Under 10s.
I'm not going on the pitch. You're out of your mind. I mean, you've got to be a fairly big name player before you start fucking pushing yourself around like that.
It was funny, the John Terry thing, I suppose. So Terry wouldn't touch the ball in the dressing room. And so they'd be like rolling the ball at him and he'd be jumping out of the way. That is funny.
Yeah, it is funny. It's funny that John Terry would have any superstitions at all, right? You just imagine him drinking his blood before the game, like, and then resting, going back in his box. All right, so moving on.
Is the next one cars?
Cars it is, yes.
There's two good stories here. What were the stories that you liked in cars?
Well, he really gets stuck into Stephen Ireland. Poor Stephen Ireland, who became the poster boy for Premier League excess, didn't he? At least, I mean, I saw him in his fancy. Was it Rolls Royce or Bentley?
Yeah, whatever.
Really loved his girlfriend. Really did. I saw him in their house and they had like a pop-up TV that came up at the end of a bed and it was all in pink. It looked like Barbie's bedroom.
Yeah. God almighty. Like, he was good as well. Like, for, he could have been great for us. It's the one that got away. Stephen Ireland. There was two that stood out for me in Cars. And the Keane one, I think I'd heard before. You'd heard that story before?
Remind us.
So, like, Crouch, this is one of those moments where it's like, I used to be such a jerk, but now I'm not. He bought like an Aston Martin and he was going around in the Aston Martin. Thought he was the flashiest son of a gun on the street. And he pulled, like, they all live in this one town in Cheshire, right? He pulls up to a traffic light and Roy Keane is in the car beside him in the traffic lights. And Crouch, he does a little finger point. And he says, to Keane. And he says, Keane just kind of looked at him, looked straight ahead, shook his head and just drove off. And then Crouch sold the car the next day, or at least that's what he says.
Yeah, he says in a story. I mean, did he think that would go well? Would you give a little finger point to Roy Keane of all the players in the whole world?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, just keep your head down.
Yeah, actually, reading about this world or listening to them talking about this world, you can see why they worship Keane, you know, because they're all such idiots.
There he is. He's just the grown-up in the room, isn't he?
Yeah, it's essentially that, isn't it? And the other one, Al, and I don't know, maybe as a kind of a little moose-boosh, a question for you. If there was anyone in this book who came across as a real prick or dickhead, who was it?
I've got two.
Yeah, go on.
Niall Ranger.
That was funny, that stuff about Niall Ranger.
Yeah, he had a sticky end, didn't he? I think old Niall Ranger, that didn't really go well for him. But I think what you're shooting for is Jermaine Pennant, right?
Fucking hell. What a fucking asshole.
Too much, too young, right?
Wasn't he 2 million? A 2 million player?
Yeah, he was like 15 or something. And that blew everyone. I mean, that's half of the course now, right? But at the time, that was a big thing.
Yeah, and much like Asa Okada, you know, seems that like this is a fellow could just breeze along and just be amazing. Like, it was later on a story about Benitez would say something to him like, what did you think of the game last night? He's like, was there a game? And Benitez would be shocked. But yeah, in terms of the cars, so he was at Real Zaragoza and then he returned to England and he got a call, or the club got a call wherever he'd went, saying Did Mr. Pennant know that he's left his Porsche at the train station in Zaragoza? What a world. Yeah. What a world these fellas live in.
No, that's true. I mean, I'd heard that story. That's quite fair. You heard that story before?
No, the Keen one, yes, but not that one.
No, that one I'd heard a few times. But that is because I think Pennant, even to football, is a poster child of a player who really did not give a fuck.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. Just on the Nile Ranger stuff, Nile Ranger, because it was in this car as a chapter as well, he was a youth player, I guess, with Crouch, and he bought a Range Rover and he had the R stuck onto the range, so it was Ranger. That is pretty funny.
I mean, I get that.
Yeah. So what was his sticky end?
Well, it was a sticky. I think he was constantly in trouble with the law. I don't think he's dead. I know it made it sound like he was dead. I don't think he's dead, but I think he did time.
He's no longer with us. He's dead. Oh, no. No, he just got let go. He makes fun of Balotelli a lot, but Balotelli is a fellow who just really doesn't give a monkey's, to use an expression that Crouch uses a few times, which is a funny expression. He drove around in a camouflage, whatever, fucking Ferrari. What the fuck? I don't know what it was, but yeah.
No, I think it was a Bentley. And I'm seeing pictures of that car. I think it looked pretty cool. I mean,
get the hell out of here. Come on.
But what was he? 22? I mean, he doesn't have to be he doesn't have to drive around in a sensible car at that age, does he? Why not? He's fucking Balotelli.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he's Balotelli, to be fair. Tattoos. Footballers are obviously they're conditioned to kind of think in terms of hierarchy and how, you have to earn your stripes, this kind of thing. But a lot of times he would be pissed off, not because somebody did something like Ranger with the car. It's because they did it too soon and they hadn't earned their stripes. So with tattoos, he'd be like, fellas would play one game and then suddenly they've got two sleeves of tattoos, as if that's some kind of rite of passage. You know, in order to get tattoos, you have to be really good at football.
You're absolutely right. He brings up this hierarchy all the time. Eh? I mean, there's a chapter on buses. And yeah, you can't just go and pop onto a bus and just sit yourself down wherever you like. Oh, no.
No. Yeah.
So if you're a new player, you've got to be in the middle of the bus. You don't go at the front of the bus. I mean, all school kids know that. But you can't go at the back of the bus, because that's where all the long-term players who've earned their bus seats down there.
Yeah, well, footballers are just men that never grew up. And it's no, the clearest indication of that is how they carry on the bus, yeah.
Well, that's right. And honestly, that's quite a nice memory, because I hadn't thought about for years that fucking charge to the back of the bus when you got the bus, hanging by the bus, waiting for it to open, with your swimming kit. Here it goes, bang, back of the bus. I'm a badass.
My favorite little story in the tattoos one was about John Crew. I remember John Crew having this big, quite extravagant writing tattooed on his neck. And it says, in Italian, he thought he was having my life, my rule. But it actually says, my life, my menstruation. Good for you, John Crew. He also said later that John Crew was the single physically strongest player. So yeah, maybe he wouldn't be calling them out on his menstrual tattoo.
Next up is defenders. He starts that. I love football. I love playing it. I love watching it. And I cannot for the life of me work out why anyone would want to be a defender. Well, I think the truth of it, no one does, do they? No one starts off wanting to be a defender.
No.
You just get put there because you're not very good going forward. Exactly. What position did you play when you were a footballer, Johnny?
Defender.
Yeah, me too. That's because I was raised in the dark ages of football, when I wasn't coached properly, and if I hadn't been, I'm sure I would have been excellent.
Yeah, of course. I did play as a striker 1 year when I was about 16 and I scored 12 goals. So that was pretty spicy. Oh.
I played for my primary school up front, but my primary school was famous for shit. Even in the small county of Rutland, North Lufton CMB was famously shit. I think we had some all defeated seasons. Well, not with me up front, lad. Not with me.
Your primary school, that's nice. Anyway, I'm still hanging on to my 12 goals that I scored as a 16-year-old.
Yeah, I haven't got any official numbers on my goals scored. But I'm sure it was hard.
Yeah, defenders, he thinks in this hierarchy, he also thinks that people kind of play their position is their personality, you know? He says later that, you know, he says later that defenders and goalkeepers can't dance and strikers and wingers can, you know? He very much thinks your position says more about you than just where you play. Show me how you play and I'll tell you who you are. That's a quote.
Yeah. Well, possibly.
Not from the book. I read it in an article by Jonathan Wilson the other day. It's from some Uruguayan essayist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We put a lot of stock into wise South American journalists, don't we? Oh, wise South American journalists. So that's very clever. He has a lot of time for Ledley King. My God, a lot of time for Ledley King. And yeah, Jamie Carragher. He really loves those guys.
Yeah, and he loves Robert Huth, but for different reasons.
Oh, God, he loves Robert Huth. I wanted to get that in earlier. My God, he loves Robert Huth.
Yeah, and that's kind of nice. Robert Huth seems like it. So he said that Robert Huth, they played together at Stoke or something, right? And he said that, like, whichever way the training was organized, there wasn't enough physical exercise in the training under Pulis. So Huth would cycle to the training ground, but it was 50 kilometers either way from his house. What a maniac. What a maniac.
Yeah. And he was putting in the extra work at the gym at the end of it as well.
Yeah, and not a good dancer.
Not a good dancer. But then when Pulis got the push at Stoke, and I think it was Mark Hughes that came in. God, that was a dark time for the Premier League, wasn't it? Oh, Stoke with Mark Hughes, man. Oh, I might give that game a miss. But yeah, Mark Hughes said he wanted a more ball-playing defender, so he fucked him off to Leicester, and then he promptly won the league. So
yeah.
Well done, Mark Hughes.
Yeah, nice for you.
Recently stacked by Bradford. Let's go to close.
Yeah, close. And this is one of the parts he is sneering at a world that he's really just part of. He tells a story about paying £800 for a jumper that he didn't like, and then he's put Guinness on it. Great. That's the story.
Yeah, that was an annoying story, wasn't it? Because, yeah, it was like, all right, I made a foolish mistake, but I bought it. I accidentally bought an £800 jumper.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough, dude.
Were you surprised to hear that David Bentley loves shopping?
I was not.
No, I wasn't surprised to hear that either. To go straight to the shopping mall from the training ground.
He was another one just didn't really care about football, right?
Really? He was more about the treads.
No, more than that. I think he had a hinterland hold. I think there was one famously a game where, like, the day before he was like pictured in the crowd at Glastonbury or somewhere, or Reading. He was like crowd surfing. It's like, oh, you're playing tomorrow. Like, yeah.
Oh, really?
Team bus. So that's it. So, well, this is more of the hierarchy chapter.
Yeah. So, do you remember who he said is, if you had to pick, you sit in these groups of four, I guess, you know, like the table with the two chairs facing each other. So what is his dream team? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Now, let's see. Hoof?
No, actually, not Hoof.
Follow.
It was Rooney, Lee Hendry, and Didi Haman. And Motley Crue.
Okay, okay. All right. So, yeah, now I remember. Yeah. So he says Rooney was just up for a laugh. You never knew what was going to happen. I think Rooney seems like a decent fella, doesn't he? Yeah. I think he'd be fun.
I've always liked Rooney, but there you go.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I passionately liked him when he broke onto the scene, and I thought he promised us World Cup success. But yeah, man.
It's funny with Rooney, isn't it? Like all time, now since Eclipse, but all time top scorer for England, all time top scorer for Manchester United, and yet somehow didn't live up to the expectation.
Yeah, that's right.
Lee Hendry, he didn't really go into it. It's funny, I guess. Didi Haman is one of the heroes of the book as well.
Yeah, Didi Haman always comes across great. He's in all the books, right? He seems to me. Didi Haman seems to pop up in every book. So he popped up in Barton's, right? And Barton was very complimentary. Crouch coming in from a different angle, also very complimentary.
Hammond's on Irish television quite a bit. And he's quite he's quite surly. So in this, he's not surly at all, according to Crouch. He's like great fun. He's great on a night out and that kind of thing. So yeah, essentially the bus hierarchy reflects the team more broadly, and there are very, very set protocols. It's pretty dull, really juvenile stuff, but maybe, like, I found myself thinking at various times that this is a good insight into the world of football. And it's a very dull world in many senses. And I also found myself having contrasting emotions or feelings of like kind of sneering and then being really envious.
Yeah, I think this book, now you say it. Now, I enjoyed it, but most of the anecdotes, I was like, oh, yeah, I've heard that. I think it was actually, it might be more enjoyable a book if you were someone who was less into football to read it and be like, oh, look at these funny things. I mean, most of these stories, you know, you're not going to surprise me with a story about like players cutting up other players' suits or ruining their shoes or something, right? That is par for the course. But I guess if you weren't a big football fan, you'd be like, lucky hell. This is what they do here. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's just kind of juvenile banter, really, isn't it? None of it is that shocking. Like, Steve McMahon doesn't get hurt once, which is obviously a disappointment on a personal level. But
there's no Steve McMahon at all, eh?
No Steve McMahon. You know, later he talks about being in the hotel and it just sounds really boring, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. And yeah, some of it is rubbish. I mean, here he's going, here's an anecdote about being on the bus. Robert Prosinecki used to smoke cigarettes. Okay, before we got on the bus. Okay, great story. Yeah. Great story. Yeah, volleys. Now we're talking.
He was good at volleys.
He was good at volleys.
Yeah.
Well, he practiced, right?
He says it was his best skill.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. I mean, immediately think of that Man City one.
Yeah.
That Man City goal, which he mentions.
Capello told Crouch that his volleying technique was wrong. And I think... they're all terrified of Capello. And Crouch said he was just standing there thinking to himself, now I just have to nod along and then I have to very politely ignore this immediately. And that was quite a nice turn of phrase.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of people ignored Capello a lot, right? He's become a figure of fun. This like absolute giant of a game. And I'm sure this is only in England, but like in England, he's a bit of a clown, isn't he? Like,
that's funny.
Whereas in Italy, I'm sure he's probably very highly rated.
Yeah. Just on the volley thing, like he does this thing here, which he does throughout the book. You know, he talks about superstitions, then he talks about the superstitions of various players. But for volleys, then he starts ranking volleys. But I don't need to read Peter Crouch's book to hear about Van Basten's volley. Like, is that necessary? Like, okay, I remember that Mexes goal, and I guess it's not every day that I think about Philippe Mexes, but we really, and then he's talking about which kind of scissors or scorpion kick was better between Giroud and Mkhitaryan. It's like, yeah.
Well, Mkhitaryan was offside, so it's Giroud.
Well, so Mkhitaryan's goal was a week earlier, so I think he planted the seed. Mkhitaryan's goal was better, but anyway.
Well, we'll have to agree to disagree.
Everybody does agree with you, by the way. Everybody seems to agree that Giroud's goal was better, but I thought Mkhitaryan's was better. I like the stuff about a drought. You know, Crouch doesn't give you very, very much. Like, if you're studying sports science, this wouldn't be much of a book for you. So the drought stuff is interesting. He went 1,229 minutes without scoring for Liverpool, which is more than 24 hours of football. That's something. Yeah,
that is something. And what's more, Peter Crouch is not a player that can hide, is he? I mean, he is... so bloody obvious on the pitch. He's the most standout player. And yeah, just, I remember him breaking that drought, Johnny. I was watching that game and I was delighted for him when he did. Absolutely delighted for him.
It's funny because we'll get to it, but like he had such a hard time earlier on in his career. But then I think people were always kind of rooting for Crouch, really.
Well, that's it. He got the abuse, but I think he had a lot of support as well.
A lot of goodwill, I think. But yeah, he scored twice for against Wigan. Then he scored 18 for Liverpool and 10 for England that season. But yeah, he says when you're playing for a good team, it's just so much easier. Just the service that you'd be getting. And then at England, he was very complimentary about Neville. He said Neville was one of the best deliverers of a ball.
Yeah, Gary Neville could put a cross in, couldn't he? He definitely could. Yeah, as he says, the more you play, one game, he wasn't worried. Two games, okay. Three games, oh God. Four games... I don't know. I mean, yeah, it must have been awful for him.
Started boozing, he said.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, he said it, yeah, to help him get to sleep at night and stuff.
Yeah, he ended up going to Carragher's local and singing Hey Jude.
Yeah, and that's it. People all over the Liverpool knew that about him.
Yeah, he loved Liverpool, didn't he? He said he only left because Torres was there and he didn't think he'd ever get Torres out of the team, but then Torres left and he obviously regretted that. But Liverpool was, it's quite clear, and you know, it's not a surprise, but Liverpool was obviously the high point for him, Liverpool in England.
Yeah, that's it. And that's it. And when Torres did leave, who did they have up front for them? Voronin and Ngo. Yeah, he probably could have got in that team. Yeah, he has a few digs at Voronin. He has a dig at Voronin being shit compared with Ian Rush. He has a dig at Voronin being shit compared with him and how he would get in the team. And also, in the clothes chapter, he has a go at Voronin's wife for always wearing leopard print. That was unnecessary, wasn't it?
Yeah.
She's probably sitting around in, I mean, as if she's not got enough on her plate at the moment. There she is off in Ukraine, like, could life get worse? Yes. Peter Crouch just slagged off your dress.
Yeah. Barnum comes in and says to his wife, just don't read this book. You should avoid this one.
I'm probably looking forward to it.
So celebrations. Okay. This is dull. Cantona's celebration against Sunderland was great. Okay, thanks.
Well, he says, he brings that up because he tried to do a similar celebration, but he just looked like a knobhead.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have the aura that Cantona has. And that's true, isn't it? I don't like a non-celebration. He talks about how he wants players to like go nuts, and I do too.
Yeah, and he says it about when they're playing against your old team. It always comes across as being a bit like bull-faced or something, doesn't it? A bit insincere. But he does say that Henri did the non-celebration too much as well, which I did agree with. I always thought.
No, I agree 1,000,000%. And no, I'm unswerving in my admiration of that gorgeous man. But yeah, I mean, just do your little shimmy, brother. That little shimmy was so sexy. I practiced trying to do the shimmy, Thierry Henry shimmy, and I wasn't good at it. But yeah, celebrate your goal, dude. Yeah, it's a sad moment. Players don't celebrate. It is.
Yeah.
It does sort of wind out a bit. I mean, if you're in the crowd, not so much, but if you're at home watching it on the TV and it's like, oh, look at that miserable bastard. Come on, lad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm too cool for this. That's what it is, right? I'm too cool to celebrate.
Yeah. You want Emmanuel Adebayor, which he obviously mentioned, running to the other end of the pitch and sliding out of me.
But I do want that. I mean, if you were a Man City supporter on that day, you'd be like, lovely lad, one of us.
And he talks, one of the things he talks a lot about in the book is the robot.
Well, that's probably the thing he is most famous for.
They were doing it one night out and then he just thought to do it when he was celebrating, and it's kind of, I think it probably made him a good bit of money, actually, because it seems he's always doing it in ads and stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. I know, and that really was what made him famous. He did it for Prince William, which is always one of those things. Like, I did the robot for Prince William, and there's a picture of it in the book. There is a picture of Prince William.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that scene? No, sir, could you please do the robot?
One would love to see this.
And he's calling him sir as well. But anyway, yeah, like, what a weird scene that would be.
Yeah.
Interviews.
Don't say stupid stuff.
I did like
the train now and they're boring. I mean, we know this.
I did kind of like when he talked about football cliches. He talked about, like, that was mildly entertaining, the death of certain football cliches and how the kind of language has evolved. Around football, like the things you hear now, you wouldn't have heard before, you know, whatever, like a low block and like the final third. Like you said, that terminology just didn't exist growing up. And it is true. We do have a totally different set of words when we talk about football now.
Yeah, we sure do. Yeah, certainly low blockers. No, we didn't see you say final third, maybe.
Well, he said no. Like, what's that one? Is it Gegenpress? Is that the German one?
Oh, that's certainly modern.
Yeah.
But that is the parlance now, isn't it? But that's straying very much into Andy Gray and territory. Like, you just mean all our defence, don't you?
Yeah, but like,
you mean a high press. You mean a high press, Gagan Preston. Come on.
I did like that, though. And I did like Sven is an interesting enough character, isn't he?
Well, he's another one. Everybody loves Sven, right? Everybody loves Sven.
Well, he's like, apparently just didn't give a monkey's, to use that expression again, about people prying into his time, into the tabloids prying into his private life. Just couldn't give a bollocks. They were like, all this stuff about Eureka, and he's like, whatever. And there was a nice story here. There was all this news about him having an affair with Ulrika, and the England team, England were at a camp, maybe even at a competition at the time, and they gathered in the kit man's room to watch one of the newspapers had done an actual like reconstruction of the affair, and they're all there watching it and laughing and joking away. And then it comes to an end, and then from the back of the room, Sven is there. He's like, "It was not like this." That is quite nice, isn't it?
Oh, they were wild times now, and you look back on it. They were wild times.
Yeah.
Southgate does nothing interesting.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
He does quite well at managing, though. So basically, that's the most important thing. So good for him.
And the most interesting thing about him is his like, waistcoat. Yeah, it's pretty dull. Okay, houses.
Big Tudor mansion. That was the thing.
Now it's shark tanks and glass walls.
Yeah.
Glass walls?
Yeah, just like the whole house is made of glass. I can imagine, yeah. Alderley Edge, right? That's where they're all hanging out. Alderley Edge, I bet it's all fancy glass. Barn conversions, where they've done like, turned it into like half of it glass. Pretty sexy.
Yeah, it's like incredible. Like the story about Scott Parker between his Chelsea and Spurs years, it spent like a load of money and loads of time doing up this house. And then he moved into the house, and then whatever, Crouch is driving on the road one day and he sees Parker coming out of an apartment with his kids, and he's like, "What happened to your house?" He's like, "Torres just offered me, like, just," he didn't say how much, but Torres just arrived to Chelsea, took one look at the house and says, "I'll buy this house from you for however much you want." And Parker's like, "Okay, fine." What a world.
No kidding. That's it. Just crazy money. Yeah, I mean, like, if you've spent that long doing up your house, and you're a footballer, so money's not an issue, right? You've got more money than 99% of people. For you to have your head turned like that, you must have got in big, right?
Yeah, must have been huge. Like, apparently he'd been doing that house up for a long time. But we were saying about the players that you didn't like, you know, that one didn't like reading this book. Sandro is a player that I like now, or a person that I like.
Yeah, man. Sandro, yeah, comes across great, right?
He does. So he had Sandro, another person maybe who was just had a lot of talent and was able to, you know, play at this kind of high level without really compromising other parts of his life. So he had to soundproof his house so he could party all night long. But he also became obsessed with darts, which is a bit of a weird thing for Brazilians. So that's kind of fun. And he became close friends. I can't remember who it was, but one of the big darts players.
Yeah, Crouchy says he'd look at pictures like, and Sandro would be in a nightclub, like bare chested with like women dancing on podiums. And it was from last night. It's like, "Where were you?" He was like, "In my house."
Okay, transfers.
Transfers is a part of the world which is a mystery, right? Whenever I read about this, they always say you have no idea how difficult they are to complete.
And this,
yeah, hundreds get completed every single year, don't they? Hundreds.
Yeah, and Crouch does say that players have no idea. No one knows how they work. He says that someone's always getting shafted, and it's more often the agent than you might think it is, he said.
Yeah, okay. You're trying to garner sympathy for football agents.
Yeah.
Don't go down that track,
So he left QPR for Portsmouth. Graham Ricks signed him for Portsmouth. And Ricks met, like, he met these various people, different managers. I think he had a phone call with Moyes. He met chairman of Burnley in like a little chef on the side of the road. But then he met Graham Ricks, and Graham Ricks was like, "I want to build my team around you. I remember he said Mark Burchill and another winger, we're going to have those on either side, and we're going to be feeding you. You're going to kind of be the," I think he said, "the tip of the diamond." Tip of the spear,
tip
of course.
Of the spear. Yeah.
He didn't say tip of the spear at all. He said tip of the diamond. But anyway, that was Crouch is like, "Okay, this sounds great." And then he goes to Portsmouth, and then Ricks is just fired. And then Harry arrives, and Harry's like, "Okay, you're out of here." Sends him off to Villa.
Yeah. Harry Redknapp again. Bloody hell, Harry Redknapp.
Music. The holy trinity of music in the dressing rooms of the 80s and 90s was, do you remember?
Phil Collins.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was always the one. Phil Collins, Rod Stewart, that was always the one. 80s, 90s footballers.
Well, the holy trinity. Bruce Springsteen, Phil Collins and Rod Stewart.
Oh, yeah, Brucey. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's it. If you didn't like one of them, you were unusual. Because I remember Stuart Pearce liked the Sex Pistols, and everyone was like, "My God, have you ever heard anything like it?"
But, like, he said that's with the 80s and the 90s. Like, he said that it wasn't, like, it was garage. this music was killed by garage music in the early 2000s. So you're telling me that like in 1999, they were listening to Phil Collins and Rod Stewart.
Yeah, he talks about how he used to pretend to like Speed Garage and he'd drive around with the lads pretending to like Steve Garage and go to Speed Garage clubs.
And this is why I think there is something nice about Crouchy. There's something like about him there, because I suppose we can all be a bit like that. He's just kind of going along with it. He's like, yeah, Speed Garage is great.
Well, this is relatable because, yeah, I mean, in my teenage years, techno, all my friends, I thought we all liked indie bands, didn't we?
As you say, he had to own up to liking Oasis, the Smiths and the Arctic Monkeys.
All the embarrassment. Can you imagine if that got out?
Did you know that Andy Cole was an outstanding rapper?
I've heard that song, Outstanding.
Yeah, well, I don't remember hearing it before, and I listened to it. His rap is fairly standard, but there's a nice bass line in that song. There is a nice groove.
Yeah, I mean, he was actually quite complimentary about that tune, wasn't he? Like,
big time. I think he called it something like a classic, maybe.
Yeah, I would say no. Not a classic. A footballer who's had an opportunity to do something because he's got a lot of money and he does it with competence.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's just kind of like rapping at, you know, it just sounds like talking, doesn't it? Like, as in the way Andy Cole is rapping, not rapping generally.
Hello, Dad. Just talking, isn't it? Talking with you. It all sounds the same. Yeah, but, he talks about having to sing at your induction at football teams.
Yeah.
That sounds fairly traumatic for your average punter. For me, it would be fabulous because I'm a great, great singer. But yeah, he sang Wonderwall. He did Informer by Snow. That's a good choice, isn't it?
I mean, if you can do that, yeah.
Yeah, famously, Jude Bellingham sang Hey Jude. That was a thing.
Mm.
What song would you sing if you had to sing a song at a football?
Oh, God. Fucking hell. I wouldn't know where to start. Like, if I had to sing a song, Let's Dance by David Bowie.
Let's Dance. I'd do Lilac Wine by Jeff Buckley to show my range. Shh, at the back. No, don't throw a bread roll at me.
It's quite self-congratulatory at times, this book. He says, Serge from Kasabian, who every footballer seems to hang out with this lad. He says, Serge thinks the footballers are the new rock stars. So, okay, Crouchy. It's kind of giving yourself a pat in the back there. But it is quite, like you mentioned that Barton was in a Morrissey video. So Crouch was in a Danny Minogue video.
No, he wasn't in a Danny Minogue video. He wanted to be in a Danny Minogue
video. No, they made it. But then it got pulled.
Oh, the song didn't get released, yeah.
Yeah, like Peter Crouch and Danny Minogue, what a combination.
Well, I mean, just how was Danny Minogue's musical career an ongoing concern when she would have approached Peter Crouch to be in a video? I mean,
you think she was punching above her weight there?
I mean, I'd say so.
It is quite astonishing the world that the footballers live in. So he was in another music video by a band called Peace. I'd never heard of them. But then he also said that, like, Didi Hamann introduced him to this German band, and it was a friend of Hammond's who would be over in Liverpool, and they'd be hanging out, and they had a kind of a comical name, and Crouchy just thought he was like a kind of in a pub band. And then he was in Berlin and he got in touch with your manager and said, oh, come and see us, we're playing. And it was like 40,000 people at this gig, and Crouchy, your mom is a Liverpool fan, and Crouchy was called out onto the stage and sang He'll Never Walk Alone in front of 40,000 people. It's quite a world that these guys live in, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty cool, isn't it? And apparently the German fans were very nice, and I just can't imagine an English fan to be as complimentary. Imagine if Thomas Muller bowled up on stage like an Oasis gig. Hey everyone, it's Thomas Muller. He's going to sing the German national anthem. Like,
I think the next thing I have here is abuse.
Yeah, it's not cool, is it? Like, he said when he was a teenage kid and he ran on the pitch and then just people would be screaming, freak, 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 even when he was playing as a schoolboy.
Yeah,
unbelievable. People are scumbags.
It wasn't nice. As in, he said his dad ended up in fights because he was surrounded by people just calling his son a freak. And he said that even the parents of other players would be like, "How is this freak getting on ahead of?" I think he says Johnny. Everyone always uses Johnny as the name for some shitty son or whatever. Like
Johnny.
Yeah. So, horrible. Like, as in, I have one experience now. Like, I remember playing a game. It was in a competition, you know? So there was maybe all of the subs, then maybe some girlfriends and friends. Maybe there was 50, 75 people decided to pitch. And I remember there was I was defending, and as a high ball came in, the striker full on grabbed me by the balls in like quite a shocking, like it's like, I've never experienced it like this before. And my reaction was to say, he has just grabbed me by the balls. And everybody just started laughing at me. Just everybody started laughing at me on the pitch, and on the side of the pitch. You know, like at the time, I was really embarrassed. It's obviously quite funny looking back, but like, can you imagine just having so many people making fun of you? Like, and not in a kind of a tongue in cheek way either, like really cutting horrible stuff. Like, that was the kind of reaction everywhere he went, because he was so unusual, right? Like, not only is he tall, he's really kind of, he's a beanpole kind of character, isn't he? He's really kind of spindly. So he's so unusual looking, and yeah, they have kind of big nose. And I suppose it was in a time when all the clothes have been really ill fitting and everything. Yeah. So he just got guff everywhere he went. So it says a lot, like, about Crouch. Like, he's obviously got really thick skin, and it's like so many people would just give up, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he just doesn't look like a footballer, doesn't he? He just doesn't look like he doesn't look like an athlete at all. I mean, yeah, you know, the old basketball thing is like, you'd probably be crap at that, you fucking spider.
Yeah, he's no, really, I mean, spindly, yeah.
Yeah, really spindly. And as he said, he used to take creatine to try and bulk out, but that would give him cramps, so he stopped, and always for the better.
Yeah,
he is thick-skinned, although he does reference once again in this chapter that he doesn't play basketball, the weather isn't different. Three times in a book he brings this up. He really doesn't like to be asked if he plays basketball or if the weather's different up there.
Yeah,
and I guess, fair enough.
He tells this anecdote. He got these cards printed out with kind of the five most commonly asked questions. And he used to bring these out on a night out. So, like, exactly that. No, the weather's not different up here.
In front of me, five bullet points. Yes, I am tall. Yes, I am 6'7". No, the weather isn't different up here. No, I don't play basketball. And finally, I'm so glad we had this conversation. Yeah, that's pretty slick, isn't it? Just pulling that card out, some fucking chancer comes up to you with a big talk and like,
I hate to ruin your view of Crouchy, but it's not an original. Do you remember Biff Tannen? Obviously, you remember Biff Tannen from Back to the Future.
Certainly do, in his almanac.
Yeah, he did the same thing. So the name of the actor is Tom F. Wilson. So I heard this before, that he had these cards printed out. So that was the original, as far as I know. And I have that printed out here. I'm Tom Wilson. I was in all three Back to the Future movies. Michael J. Fox is nice. I'm not in close contact with him. Christopher Lloyd is nice. He is a very shy man. Crispin Glover is unusual, but not as unusual as he sometimes presents himself. We got along nicely. Leah Thompson is nice. Eric Stoltz originally played Marty, but was fired due to performance issues. It goes on. There's a whole page of stuff like that. It's quite funny.
Yeah, good old Biff.
Yeah,
Biff Tannen. I know he's a good egg.
One thing on that, like, I suppose the kind of quite remarkable thing is that, like, that he turned it around so dramatically, because I think he is a widely kind of loved character now, Crouch, isn't he?
No, very much so, I think. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, so like, I'm sure when he was coming off at halftime and seeing his father like physically fighting men who'd been making fun of his son, he couldn't have imagined in the situation where he was this kind of universally loved character. So there you go. Good for you, Crouchy.
No kidding. I mean, especially when he's at QPR, right? There's no, you know, he played for England many times. Well, the next chapter is headers, which very annoyingly doesn't precede the volleys chapter, but it obviously should. Very quickly, he talks about his England goal at the World Cup against Trinidad and Tobago. I remember that game. Pulled the hair of a lad, scored the goal.
Well, on that one, they pulled the hair off the lad. The name of the lad he pulled the hair on is Brent Sancho, and he became Minister for Sport. And Crouch said that fella did an interview, and he said that Peter Crouch is probably the most hated Englishman in the history of Trinidad and Tobago. Do you think that's a touch of recency bias there, maybe? Like, Trinidad and Tobago was an English colony, like.
I think you're probably right there, Johnny. I'd like it if there was a small island nation that hated me. If there was just one, I think that'd be kind of cool.
His thing about headers, I suppose, is that people just assume that headering is his thing, and he is the now joint top scorer in the Premier League of headers, but he had to work on it. It wasn't his natural game. He worked on it a lot and he learned to love it. And there is a part where he kind of describes how to position yourself and stuff, which I found kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was quite interesting. And again, reading all these footballers' autobiographies, this should be obvious, but practice really is very helpful, isn't it? Really, really helpful to practice being good at football.
Yeah.
And in these cases, it's worked.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, haircuts is next.
But then he's talking about how Beckham had the courage to try a different thing for his hair. So, oh God, come on.
Do you remember the time, though, Johnny? Bloody hell. When he shaved his head, I can remember in his studio, it was one of those games, it's like, oh, he asks for a lot of trouble, doesn't he? Look what he's done now. He shaved his head. Like, can you believe it? I remember that. Like, people were genuinely like, oh, look, bloody Beckham. But he's done it again, look. Yeah. This was before before he missed the goal against Greece when he was still a pariah. But yeah, courage is a strong word, isn't it? Like?
But then I do find myself enjoying some of the anecdotes. And one of the anecdotes I really enjoyed was Rio told them when they were at England that Cristiano would stand naked in front of the mirror in awe at his own reflection, talking about how beautiful he was. And the other players would be winding him up. Messi is a better player. And Ronaldo would say, yes. But Messi doesn't look like this.
A, I can't believe that he would say, yes, I agree with that.
Yeah. So
B, I was surprised even back then. I know he was only 19 at the time. I mean, Ronaldo's kind of scary, isn't he? Like, if you were a younger, I mean, I guess he was a younger player then, but I can't imagine anyone at Juventus was like, guess what, Cristiano, you're not as good as, I can't imagine them having that banter with him then, right?
Yeah.
No, I can imagine he'd just be furious and get you sold.
You'd be transferred immediately. So hotels is the next thing I have. There was a very nice story I thought about Xavi Alonso and Xavi Alonso's wife. That was nice.
Oh yeah, that was a nice story.
Yeah, and Crouch obviously likes Carragher a lot, and Carragher comes across in the book as a nice fella. He says that he was staying in this hotel in Liverpool, and there was this girl, and she was like smoking.
Working at reception, right?
Working at reception, and giving him the eyes, and he was like, "This one is amazing. Where do you see this one?" And Carragher was like, "Oh yeah, go on, what she look like?" And he was like, "She looks like this. She's so beautiful." Blah blah blah.
He said, "I see her every morning." Like,
yeah, I think I've given a chance. Yeah, it was Xavi Alonso's wife. She was just working there to practice her English. That is nice.
Yeah, and that's a nice story. That is genuinely self-deprecating. The last chapter is, the last chapter is just plain weird. It's just a little love letter to a certain Liverpool midfielder.
Well, I thought about this. Is it because it's how to be a footballer and he thinks Gerrard is the best? He's the paradigm.
Could do everything old Stevie G, tackle, pass, shoot, block. Got the lot. Yeah. Nonetheless, the last chapter in your book is about another midfielder. I think it's pretty strange. Yeah, I mean, throw it in the middle. But don't, the last chapter, the last thing you think about is, does he owe Gerrard a favour? I don't know. It's just very strange. I mean, if you want to sing the praises of Steven Gerrard, but don't leave it to the last chapter.
And like, Gerrard doesn't really get much of a mention up until that point of the book.
It's no, like
he wrote the book and he said, "Do us a favor, Steve. Will you read this book and give me some feedback?" And Gerrard reads it. And he's like, "It's good. But you know what I could do with it at the very end? It's just an additional chapter entirely dedicated and about me." That's how it reads, you know? Oh, yeah. And there was a good story. So before the Champions League final, they went go-karting and he was going around, he was going around the track, and he claims that his brakes weren't working, and he went straight for his, in a Joey Barton type movie, went straight for his teammate and the fellow who played in the same position as him, Dirk Kuyt. And, Xavi Alonso had to jump out of the way, and Kuyt just leapt like a stag into the air.
And crouched right over it.
Yeah. That's quite something, wasn't it?
I was surprised he went go-karting before a Champions League final, don't you think?
I'd say no. Okay, it's a bit unfair to make fun of Crouch for his height after reading his book, and he's a nice fella, but he must look pretty funny in a go-kart.
Yeah, his knees up, right? Yeah.
This is the largest automobile I can afford.
Very good.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Crouch, yeah. So, what do you reckon? What do you think about this book?
Yeah, this is the one. As I said earlier, I think if you don't know that much about football, I think there's a lot here for you. There's a lot of funny stories. He does come across quite pleasant. But as I say, as someone who's read a few football books, there's not many news stories for me there. Not. I didn't learn much, but I enjoyed it. It was an easy read. I was happy to read it. It wasn't like Drogba. I was like, oh God, I've got to go through this.
Yeah, and it was a bit of an antidote after the McGrath one as well. The McGrath book is a great book, but fucking hell, you could do with a few like inane kind of like anecdotes. Yeah, I thought it was a decent book, and if you just want mild entertainment and from a reasonably likable fella, I think it's it's not something I'd be recommending in a huge rush to people, but if someone said, is this any good? I'd be like, yeah, it's grand book.
Yeah, fine for a flight. 5 hours of entertainment, dead easy to read, little digestible chapters.
Yeah.
And a bit of fun. And again, yeah, Crouchy is a sympathetic character.
And he obviously liked doing it, even though you seem to think that he didn't have much to do with writing it, because he's done two books since. Okay, well, that's kind of it, isn't it? I would say, what's the adequate scoring for Crouch? I guess it's robots.
He's three robots.
I would give
He's it. Three Trinidadian sports ministers out of five. Yep, three out of five. That's what we... give me Crouch's book. It's a fun read. He seems all right.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, well, we're doing... The next book is Neville Southall. I think it's The Bin Man Chronicles, because he was a bin man. Yeah, so that's next. And yeah, thank you very much, Al. Thanks to Dara for the music. And please follow us on our social media and tell your friends.
Thank you.